Amitshila Buddha, Amitshila Dharma, Amitshila Sangha. Good to see you all today. So, several times in the last couple of months, I've had Sangha members ask me, so, what's happening with the temple? You know, how are things doing with the Sangha? And some of these are people who I haven't seen for quite some time. And some of these are people who are just finding their bearings, just getting started in practice here. And it's a relevant question for both sets. And what I'm hoping to do today is explore some of the Dharma of how things are going. And I want to start by introducing a teaching from Dogen. This is from the fascicle Dotoku. Dotoku means the ability to speak or to express. It's not one of Dogen's most famous fascicles, but it is an important one, and it's one of my personal favorites. It begins, "The Buddhas and ancestors are the expression of the truth. Therefore, when Buddhist ancestors are deciding who is a Buddhist ancestor, they always ask, do you express the truth or not? They ask this question with a mind, they ask with a body, they ask with a staff and a whisk, and they ask with outdoor pillars and stone lanterns." And Dogen says that the Buddhas and ancestors are the expression of truth. That expression of truth is Dotoku. Buddhas and ancestors are Dotoku. Buddhas and ancestors are actually the ability to speak. What Dogen is talking about here with expressing truth, it's not just like avoiding falsehoods, which sure, that also, but it's really about reality. It's really about how we experience this as it is. So the truth right now is that it's springtime. Happy equinox in about an hour. So we can talk about that. We can share associations and anecdotes we have with springtime, maybe observations. And that's a sliver of the reality of springtime. So how do we actually express it? I think the answer has to do with a vulnerability, an availability, a transparency to the reality of the moment as it courses through us. It's a softening when we notice a particular color hue or a quality of light or a smell walking through the plum grove. Releasing who we were the moment before as we're inundated by the immediacy of this experience. That is expression of truth. The who we were the moment before ceases. That self drops away. What could be more true than that? These are simple examples of expression of truth. These are simple examples of how we meet and influence each other. We share moments of direct experience. We share moments of turning, of dropping, of letting go. Pivoting towards our experience over time. This is bodhisattva activity. This is what we're doing in this container of sangha. In this fascicle of Dotoku, Dogen tells a story. He tells a story of Seppo, who's a Zen teacher, and he lives at the bottom of a mountain. And somewhere up on the mountain, there's this hermit who lives, and he's heard tales of him. And one day, a student comes up to him and says, I met the hermit, and I asked him, you know, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? And the hermit showed his ladle, and he says, because the ravine is deep, the handle is long. And, you know, the hermit was kind of a wild and woolly fellow, and he lived in a wild and remote place, and to reach the water down through the boulders, he had to have a long-handled ladle. And Seppo approved of that answer. The student could not express anything in return. So Seppo set out to meet the hermit. He climbed up the mountain. And when he encountered him, he said, express the truth and I will not shave your head. And the hermit immediately washed his head and sat down in front of him, and Seppo shaved his head, thus expressing truth. In commenting on this exchange, Dogen said, if they were not a dragon and a dragon, it could not be like this. The black dragon's pearl is tirelessly guarded by the black dragon, but it rolls naturally into the hand of a person who knows how to take it. There was a meeting of minds. There was Buddha recognizing Buddha. Expression of truth is what knits Sangha together in a way that is synergistic, in a way that is nourishing. We see each other be affected by the Dharma. So that's a Dharma piece, and I want that to serve as the backdrop and kind of the lens through which we look at some of these other aspects. So what are some of the truths that we're experiencing as a Sangha right now? I'll share some of the themes that I'm noticing. I spend a lot of time Sangha watching. I spend most of my time Sangha watching by virtue of being here. But this is just, you know, my perspective, and I'm curious to hear observations that you may have as well. So one of them is that Dharma Rain is, as a Sangha, is both getting older and younger. So, of course, like, we're all older today than we were yesterday. That's not really what I'm talking about. There's a loose-ish cluster of, you know, maybe 20% of the Sangha who were, you know, either started around the time I did or had already been practicing for some time and who are still around. You know, so practice has changed, bodies have changed, situation has changed, and all of those will continue to change. And that is becoming more and more visible. The hand-in-hand program emerged over the last several years to help Sangha members who are moving along this continuum of old age, sickness, and death. And collectively, we're learning about this in new ways and aspiring to be skillful in meeting these changing needs. There's a, on the original preserved copy of the manuscript that Dogen wrote for this lecture, these are combinations of Dogen's edited text. He did a lot of editing after he gave the lecture. And Ajo's transcriptions of the talks. So we don't really know if the added-on note was from Dogen or from Ajo. But anyway, it says, 30 or 20 years is the time taken for expression of the truth to be realized. These years and months, with all their energy, cause the truth to be expressed. Which is kind of a high bar, but it also feels accurate. All that time and practice is valuable. Practice and realization also don't depend on time. There is the sudden and the gradual. One's meditation after 20 years isn't necessarily better than one's meditation during their first year. One's insight is not necessarily more clear or more profound. And all those years and months of sharing practice provide critical support for this container, and we should revere that. Another related shift is that, you know, over the last decade or so, the median age of the Sangha has dropped significantly. I say significantly so it sounds like I'm actually working with data, but I'm not. This is just, again, my impression. We've gotten a lot younger. And some of that might be moving to this campus. Some of it might be just generational shift. I'm not sure. Lots of possible influences. An obvious one more recently is that during the pandemic in the Portland area, younger people were more willing to reliably attend in-person events. And so we've skewed that way. And as people show up who used to be regulars but haven't been around much in the last couple of years, you know, they're expressing surprise at how many people they don't know. How much of the Sangha is like new and fresh. So, yeah, that's noticeable. And so what I'd like to say about this from a Dharmic perspective is that if you're an elder in this temple, you know, lean into beginner's mind. Life is ephemeral and things keep changing. If we don't nurture the mind that asks questions, we're going to feel disconnected. We're going to feel out of touch. And if you're newer in the Sangha, beginner's mind may be easier, but lean into growing roots. You know, to adding to that sense of container, to that sense of support. You belong. Embody that. For everyone, do this work of knitting Sangha together. That happens through sharing live experience. And smelling the plum blossoms in a way that you are seen smelling the plum blossoms. Seen through. Seeing each other for who we actually are, looking past the image, the assumption, the habit, and really allowing ourselves to discover and be affected by. When you engage someone that you haven't yet, it creates a little bond between the two of you, but it also is felt by others. Practicing, we feel the tensile strength of the container. We're sensing whether we can put weight there or not. And doing the little things that improve that, that knit this together, make Sangha treasure more stronger and supportive for everyone. Dogen says here, having accumulated long months and long years of holding on to this effort, we then get free of the past years and months of effort. While we are endeavoring to get free, the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are all equally intuiting and affirming freedom. So this interpenetration, right? Before and after. Another cluster of themes has to do with how the Sangha relates to the broader world. We're in a fairly polarized and politicized time right now, and that has an impact on the experience of Sangha. Over time, Dharma Rain has tried to not be divisive or exclusionary over politics, right? Kyogen and Gyoko, who founded the temple, you know, they certainly had their political views, but they rarely made them public. They rarely broadcast them, occasionally. And even less often made it part of the teaching. And that certainly wasn't because of an apathy or an avoidance of societal responsibility, but a valuing of the importance of creating a safe space for deep practice and seeing past the boundaries that separate. There are some, you know, sanghas that forefront, that kind of revolve more around activist work, and that's part of their draw, which is great. Hooray. And it's also not quite what we're offering here. And that doesn't mean that we're not engaged or involved or don't have our share of good works. But that's not the identity. And at the same time, the world keeps changing. And as a temple and as a sangha, we have to keep working to stay attuned to that. And one example there is the equity work that has been happening in the sangha over the last 5 to 10 years. We have had a lot of learning to do. And that's a multifaceted effort by a lot of people to create a practice environment that is diverse, equitable, and inclusive. It's a skillful means conversation that is kind of sifting through oppressive aspects of Zen and oppressive aspects of, you know, Portland in 2022. So it's happening and it's a work in progress. One example there is that we just finished a series of trainings by Tusk, a consulting group for 25 people who are in leadership positions at Dharmarain. And part of what emerged from that process was that we've really actually covered some important ground and built some important consensus and shared understanding. And there is still work to do. As we got into more advanced and challenging material in the third session, the fractures, the misses became more apparent. And I see this equity work that the Sangha is doing as really arising out of Kyogen and Gyokuko's prioritizing of access as they were kind of nurturing the Sangha 40 years ago, of making the monastic forms and schedule accessible to everyone to partake of creating a robust children and family programming. The environment in which this is all playing out has shifted, but that intent to connect and transform carries through. Another way that we shine the light out instead of just turning it in is through this place, through the temple buildings and grounds. The campus here has given us a whole range of ways in which we are interacting with the community. We have a rich relationship with the high school across the street. We're hosting several meditation retreats for them over the course of the spring. We work with a variety of youth and environmental groups, partner with a food pantry, have refuge recovery meetings here. We're part of the neighborhood's disaster response planning. And we're a deeply appreciated part of the neighborhood. The trails, the chickens, the bit of nature and quiet and beauty that people can touch here are draws for many, irrespective of any Buddhist appreciation or aspiration. And the hope is that something of the caring, the reverence, the noticing that we do here rubs off. I'll also mention that historically we've kind of leaned on the prison program and the Dharma school program for, you know, this outreach and service efforts. And those two really significant programs in the Sangha have been heavily impacted by COVID, the constraints of the pandemic. And, you know, just recently are both of those are kind of seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. So in the last month, there is Some prison visits have started, or being back, allowed back in. And in the next month, as you heard at announcements, Dharma School is starting up in a somewhat abbreviated form. And we're doing the full-on Mandala on the Mountain camp experience this summer. Also on the note of coming out of the pandemic, we've been through a period where adaptability and flexibility have really been prioritized. That's been what was needed. And so that creative, overall less formal aspect of practice has been kind of fun, kind of jarring at times also. Especially when it's below freezing and you're trying to have breakfast on the Yungawa. Oh! And the need for that is lessening. And we're gradually returning to a greater emphasis on form as a teaching vehicle. Like there's a way in which we do things. So, you know, Ryotan is making announcements about how we do things, actually. We don't cross through the roads. We hold our sutra books like this, etc. We're tightening up the training for the ceremonial positions. There's, you know, there's probably going to be a little more feedback, a little more corrections about how we move, how we do things when we enter the Zendo, stuff like that. We're going to return to having two Sanzen lines, offering Sanzen in this small room out here, as well as in the Founder's Shrine during Sundays. That'll start in about a month. We'll start closing the sliding doors to the Zendo again. We'll make a change or two to how we're offering Zoom. Sundays will stay the same, but there are some other, you know, small adjustments that'll happen. A greater emphasis on form doesn't mean that, like, we've been doing it wrong. There's a way we do it. There's a tradition which has been passed down. You know, Oryoki is described, you know, 1,000 years ago, and it's almost identical to what we do. So there's a way that it's done, and there are adjustments, right? That's part of the form. We acknowledge the difference and move on. We make adjustments for serving food with special diets. We make adjustments for physical limitations with chairs in the Zendo and a lying down station, right? We adjust in lots of ways for special circumstances. Following the form or not following the form doesn't bring us closer to Buddhahood. Right, no one gets struck by lightning if they forget to bow when they cross the center of the room. It's just how it's done. It's just that there's a way, and that is expressing the truth. That is showing up for Sangha in a way that we can hear, we can understand. There's a neutrality to it. You know, I bow because the bell rings. I may like bowing in that moment, I may not, and that's not what's relevant. When we bow together, we are expressing truth. And that's enough. Another couple of things I'm noticing, smaller things, is that there are some transitions. You know, there's... you know, we have a postulant now. We had another who then decided to do it a little differently. There's a couple more who are asking. So that those are significant changes for the Sangha. There's a transmission or two likely to happen in the next year or two. It's the signs of the Sangha maturing. I feel like for me personally, the Hojo, the abbot's residence, is now finished and moved into, and that's an expression of commitment to the Sangha. And that counts. There's something important about that. It's not just convenient. I want to read the closing lines of Dotoku. They're some of my favorite. There are ways for good friends in the expression of the truth to pay unexpected visits. And between friends who are unable to say anything, although they do not expect recognition, the means are already present for their selves to be known. When there is learning and practice of knowing the self, there is the reality of expressing the truth. When there is learning and practice of knowing the self, there is the reality of expressing the truth. This unable to say anything is referencing sesshin, right? The sharing of silence as we practice together. Knowing what it's like to be right there with our experience. Seeing that experience of dissolving, of translucency on other people. In Sanzen today, someone described it as, it's like a rinse cycle for the soul. And someone described it as, it's all too close. And someone described it as, it's like I'm about to cry, but I'm not sad. Sorry if I'm paraphrasing. And I want us to appreciate these expressions of truth. Months and years of trying to relate to Buddhahood, to mystery, to the absolute. It brings about these moments in our practice, where the sense of who I am softens. It drops into this moment. Who I was before is not relevant. It feels raw, it feels vulnerable. And our practice is visible in how we integrate and digest those moments, how we are shaped by them, how we learn from them. And that's what we're sharing by practicing together.
We'll now have questions and comments. If you're in the Zendo, raise your hand and I'll bring you the microphone. If you're on Zoom, you can write your name in the chat box and Tony will unmute you, or you can write your question or comment and Tony will read that aloud. Also, if I bring you the microphone, please say your name before asking a question or commenting. I'm Thomas.
I'm Genko, and I just wanted to comment about the fact that I have been going into the prison now for a week and a half. It's been great. I wanted to speak to the question of flexibility, because in the prison, of course, I don't have this hall. So one of the challenges for me is to decide what should it look like there, given the situation, the place, that I have. And I'm going to three different prisons, and there's three different situations there. In one of them, I am not allowed to light a candle. So I have, one of those battery-operated jobbies. And it's going in the middle of the day, and you can't even see it. So, oh well. So there's a lot of oh well. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, finding that following what form we can, in the best way that we can, is is useful, is valuable, mm-hmm. And it can change mm-hmm. over time. It just sort of depends. But that that willingness to say, okay, here we are. I mean, when I first started going to CRCI, all we had were chairs. Okay, we sit in chairs. Fine, we can do that. Now we have Safu, Zabutons, and benches. Okay, great, you know. And it's just a question of seeing what is possible in any given situation, in any given moment. And that has been useful practice for me, to just see how to do things a little differently. And so sometimes here, things will be changed. And then it's like, okay, well, I know how to do this. I know how to find this workaround. And it's still honoring the form, and it's still honoring the practice.
So. Yeah.
Zoom, there's a comment from Yutman.
Hello, this is Yutman bowing in. Can everyone hear me okay? Yep. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Kakumyo, for your talk. It's very moving for me to hear all of the changes that have been happening, and I feel moved to share because I think that maybe some may have a similar experience to what I'm feeling right now, and I'm hoping that you can maybe give some advice or just I'd like to hear your response. Hearing you speak about some of the things that are going to be returning is sort of a reminder to me on what has been lost. Lost is the wrong word. What has been sort of adjusted, how we've been flexible with our forms and with our practices since COVID has, you know, impacted our community. And I'm feeling a deep sense of grief. Actually, both grief and joy, that some of these nourishing things are going to be returning, things like the school program and hearing Gengo talk about the prison program. And I imagine one of my most favorite things, I hope I don't put pressure, but, you know, community lunch was a huge draw for me initially. And I hope maybe that will be returning as well. And I'm even feeling some tears, you know, because, you know, as one of the postulants who found that I needed to take another path currently, anyway, being reminded of those nourishing things. Oh, yeah, there's just like a sense of grief and the impact that COVID had. And I'm wondering if you have any advice on how to work with that feeling. Or maybe just a response as well would be nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mostly what I want to say is that you're demonstrating it. So like we let that, you know, when the grief wells up, we let that be seen. You know, we see it ourselves. We allow that to be part of our experience, and it has something to say. And what I'm seeing it say through you is that, like, this is precious. This is something valuable. This is something that I yearn for, and that matters. That counts. And like grief is uncomfortable, and we're up to it. It's so worth it to feel it directly and let it course through. And we want the clarity that comes with that that uprightness. So yeah, I hope others are, you know, experiencing it with that kind of preciousness. That yes, like. These forms are dear, and yeah, you know, like the adaptation is great. It's important. That's part of what we do. And like, wow, like 1,000 years of eating the exact same way, like that's really sacred. There's something reverent about that. That's valuable, and we don't want it lost. And so, you know, we're here to maintain that tradition, to pass it on to others.
Thank you, and Jitsu-san. Gosh, I'm not going to miss the cold oatmeal outside in the mornings. I am really looking forward to when I'm here early in the morning and sharing that bowl of oats in there. I'm one of those older folks that he talks about. Kakumyo, and like this morning I asked you about something that seemed odd and you kind of gave me this look like, why are you worried about that? And form related. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I realize a great inconsistency in myself and kind of the whether I go with something or I resist it. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention this. It's kind of an odd little anecdote, something that happened to me about 3 weeks ago. I was in New York City, in Manhattan, and I had just gone to an ATM and was about to head back to my hotel room. And I'm standing on the street corner waiting for the light to change, and a woman walks up to me and begins asking me for directions in Spanish. And I just kind of looked and I responded in Spanish. My Spanish is not great, but I did what I could. And the whole time I'm thinking, why is this happening? It's not a neighborhood where it wasn't like it was a part of New York where everything's in Spanish all around. But I just kind of did it. And it seemed kind of natural at the time. And afterwards, it was like, huh, why did that happen? So it's kind of a lesson for me in dealing with things, the situation in the moment, instead of getting all uptight about it. Mm-hmm. More food for thought for myself here this morning with what you said. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So one of those quotes I read, it spoke to that I'm not going to find it right now, but it spoke to that element of surprise that there's something about like meeting a moment directly that like it just shocks what was happening right before out of the system. And, you know, we step outside of the script, the schema for how this should go. And that's so freeing. And you know, that's basically what we're learning in meditation is how to step outside of that. Surprise is a great aid if we don't just, like, resist it on a kind of knee-jerk level. If we let ourselves be open to that undefinedness that happens when we suddenly don't know. Yeah, nice illustration.
Zoom, there's a long comment from Yuetsu, so bear with me. He says, what you began this talk with was basically a question about how we are and what we're observing about our own Sangha. This reminded me of a fun practice Kyogen and Gyokuko senseis used to do when Kyogen was still alive, of reading to each other, and how much they loved reading to each other the tale of Parsifal and his being sent, this is King Arthur's Parsifal, and his being sent to approach a king who was ailing. As I understand it, everyone else around the king was tied in knots, not knowing what to do or the proper ceremonial way to approach the king. At the appropriate time, Parsifal simply asked the king, how are you? This is what I feel you've kind of done with all of us this morning after a very long 2-year winter and all of us under the pandemic. And he adds that he's mostly fine, by the way, and I hope you and all else are well.
Thank you, Yuetsu.
My name is Dainin. I think I'm an older. I've sort of returned to active practice after 20 years. And I was going through recently, last month, my wife died, and I sort of all these things have been hitting and dealing with. And I came across, as I was going through things, an old tape of a talk I gave in 1994, I think it was, on form and liturgy. And I find myself here going through things that are similar, but yet different. Okay, that's not the chant we use. That's not when we were presenting. That's not the way we did it. We had all these things, but yet they're the same. And so it's just been that practice, that challenge, I guess, of bowing. I mean, for me right now, it's a bowing practice. It's like I just accept what is in front of me, and I try to relate to it as best I can, and not let those things niggle at me. I got enough niggling with my knees as it is right now. But I mean, that's part of the dealing with change.
Yeah.
You know that our bodies don't stay the way they were in 1994. So it's nice to sort of reconnect and come back. But at the same time, it's as you said, allow yourself to be surprised, but not hold on to, well, that's not right, and let that go. So.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's similar to, you know, and that's really, you know, exactly what I was saying of like, you know, lean towards beginner's mind. It's similar to the practice of pilgrimage where, you know, you go to another temple and like, oh yeah, it's the same. And all these little details are just like a little bit funny, a little bit not expected, a little bit like not the way I would do, etc. And like to practice there, like you have to just kind of like Exhibit A. You just have to kind of dive in, as Fish is demonstrating. And there's splash, you know, like there's emotional splash to it. And that's inevitable, and it's okay. It's okay.
On Zoom, there's a comment.
There we go. Okay, we can do Zoom and then we'll get Fish.
Comment from Daicho.
Hey, so I am one of those old ones too, and really glad to hear Dainin. So it's been in the past 2 years, I've been to the temple like twice, and so I've been feeling really far from it. And but in this April, I am trying to come back to the temple. Hopefully it will work out. And so in a way, it's just really, everything's kind of new, because 2 years, a long time. And also recently I stopped using the name Daicho, because it just started to feel really kind of strange to use that name. And so that would be kind of interesting thing to observe. So I will be rejoining as Mikyo and see what happens. And what else? Yeah, so that's a comment. Just kind of everything looks probably pretty new to me, and I will see some people I know, but a lot of people I don't know. And so just all those things kind of happening to me. Yeah. Thank you.
It's good to see you, Mikyo.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Flying Fish. First of all, I just want to say, for those of you who don't know, I moved from Minnesota and practiced there for 25 years and then moved here, and it has been just that kind of a journey. But I want to say thank you to everyone here. That's been such a grace-filled experience to join a Sangha like this one. You're very lucky to have such a lovely place and such dedicated practitioners. But what I wanted to talk to about is I'm also new, so the expression of growing roots really struck a chord with me. And leaning into growing roots, and it occurred to me that's so countercultural, actually, to grow roots. And not only are we trying to grow roots here, but we're trying to grow roots in Portland. And what a sacred journey that is, growing roots. And I was really glad you lifted that up and encouraged people to embrace that and think about what that means to grow roots in a spiritual community. And also, just know that you're not walking there alone. So that's it.
The analogy is so apt, because it's pushing into new ground, and like every moment of that, like there's something, there's resistance, there's interaction, there's it's dark, it's cold, it's wet, and so it's a lot of these moments of having to open up to that experience, whatever it is, and that's seen over time. Like, that's recognized that, like, oh, right, like, they belong. Like, that's they've done that work of establishing, of making the transplant. Yeah. Fish was also pointing out that it speaks to the element of stability. It also speaks to the richness of the interaction effect. Like, all the soil is so interesting. The other thing I wanted to, this is one of the themes that I didn't quite make the list, but since you brought it up, I'll speak to it, is that in the last, decade or so, Dharma Rain has become a place that has a lot of transplants, a lot of established dedicated practitioners have, due to life circumstance stuff or upheaval in sanghas or whatever, ended up growing roots here. And it's a significant chunk of the sangha. It's more than many might realize. And that really has enriched the soil, that we're growing from here. And I think it's a vote of confidence in the way this is working here. Yeah. Last call.